Call of members present.
Yes, of course. Me just one moment. Okay, Sandy West.
Present.
Tammy Caputo.
Present.
Janet Claire.
Present.
Mary Cordes.
Present.
Esther Curry. Sarah Isaacs.
Here.
Susan McKinney.
Yeah.
Jennifer Slack. Did I see Jennifer? Okay. Paula Treder.
I'm here.
Diane Yeoman.
Here.
All right, so next on the agenda is the approval of the minutes, and there was a typo on the agenda item. The minutes are August 10th. Any recommendations or changes that anyone needs to see before we do a roll call vote?
Hey, Sandy, this is Mary at Hainer Library. Can you guys hear me okay?
Yes.
Okay, great. I'm at a CERC desk, and so I'm going to be muting in and out, but I wanted to be sure my microphone was working. Thank you.
You're welcome.
Okay, do we have a motion to accept those corrected minutes?
I move that we accept the minutes as corrected.
Okay, thank you, Susan.
This is Sarah Isaacs. I second that motion.
Okay, thank you, Sarah. All right, we'll go ahead and do a roll call. Sandy West.
Yes.
Tammy Caputo.
Yes.
Janet Claire.
Yes.
Mary Cordes?
Yes.
Sarah Isaacs?
Yes.
Susan McKinney?
Yes.
Paula Treder?
Yes.
Diane Yeoman?
Yes.
Excellent. Thank you.
And I will turn the meeting over to Cassie for share update.
Well, thank you so much. The big news I'm going to start with is we are leading up to the Aspen go live date for our first cohort. We've got about 8 libraries now that are planning to go live on Monday, and then a few going live a little bit later in the week next week. And so I'm super excited about that. We're still working out some of the last minute odds and ends with Aspen, and we're going to be talking a little bit about the configuration today. The next thing that I wanted to mention is the share member fee proposal that had been the Finance and Policy Committee had been working on. That was approved for an inclusive model that would include Aspen and Cloud Library for all of our members. And the information will be presented to members at an upcoming meeting, which we have said that I believe it was January 24th, but I would like to invite everybody to attend that meeting. And so this is just our normal annual meeting where we go over all of our changes, that some of the things we've been working on for the year, and then we will submit that out for vote. So yes, that is the 24th at 2 p.m. So if you wanted to go ahead and get that on your calendars, and we will be presenting that information to members so they can review and make a decision about some of the upcoming changes. It's not been updated yet on the website, but if you want an idea of what your fee would look like, it would be the inclusive model, and that would be the number for your next year. So the numbers from the original town halls and the original communications didn't change. It's just we did decide to go with that inclusive model because we found it was going to be a better value for the most members. Now, there was some concern with the town hall that, you know, some of the increases are fairly large. The Finance and Policy Committee did make a recommendation to go ahead and cap the fees at 17%. And so the average fee increase was about 16%. So a 17% cap for the next 2 years for each library. And so to make up that deficit, we're actually going to be relying on the reserve funds that we have available. And that's based on our finance director, Rhonda, actually recommended last year that we move the operating fund balance into the Illinois funds so that it could start generating interest, because the Illinois funds was doing very well. And so that was almost $80,000. And so we had originally just planned to leave that interest to accrue into our reserve fund. But because we have that, that will give a little bit of relief for our libraries that are going to experience the more dramatic increases over these next 2 years. So we were really pleased to be able to offer this, because I think that there was a sense of not a clear pathway going forward. There wasn't any strong preference one way or the other from our membership, but we did feel like the increase was going to be large, even when you didn't factor in things like Aspen. And so I think that this was, the idea was that members are going to get the biggest bang for their buck with this model. So we're really excited to be able to present that to members again, and we should have a decision on that sometime in February. The other thing that I wanted to mention is that we have some changes to the Open Meetings Act that is being reviewed by ILA and their Public Policy Committee, for specifically for committees. Now, for this committee and for a lot of our IHLS committees, they are considered advisory. So it's being sent to, for example, the committees at IHLS are being, they would make a recommendation that would go up to their full board of trustees. The reason it matters is because a committee that's making decisions, they are interpreting that those committees need to meet in person. And so this committee would be considered advisory. And I've made the argument that even our share executive council meeting is advisory, specific in the sense that anytime there's a change, it actually goes out to membership to vote. So they are making the recommendations for members, and then members would then decide. But again, it's causing some disruption to a lot of our committees, and we're managing that on the IHLS side. What that means for this committee, again, we are considered advisory, but because of the OMA rules, the latest advice from Mr. Lanzini has been that each of your public library locations would be considered a public access point. So you might have noticed on the agenda, it lists each of your libraries. That also means, so for a quorum, for example, that we would need to meet virtually in public locations to meet quorum. So if you're working remotely that day, or you know you're going to be at a doctor's appointment later and you're just working from home, totally fine. It's just that that might affect our quorum numbers. So please let me know if you're going to be working outside of your library that day. So minor change. It shouldn't affect us too much, but just to explain why your agenda might have looked a little bit different. I know we also have some really important things coming up with the barcoder refresher training. That is still, we still have quite a few individuals who have not completed that training who might need to. And we have reached out to the directors. We've reached out to people where we had contact information. But in January, those permissions will be deactivated. So if you have any staff members or want to reach out to Jennifer, she could probably provide a report of anybody on your team that has barcoding permissions. And so she should be able to help you with that. Dina or Jen, am I missing anything that we needed to add?
All good on my end.
Okay. Chase, did you have anything on the communication side that I might have missed?
I think the only thing we need to mention would be that we're going to be closed for the holidays upcoming. We're going to be closed on December 22nd, the 25th, the 29th, and then January 1st. And then additionally, if you haven't already signed up for text alerts for Polaris, you can text Polaris to 84483 to get downtime alerts. And we're also going to be starting, hopefully, to send out alerts whenever things go back up. So that way you know when service has been restored. But I think that's everything I can think of.
Excellent. Thank you so much. Does anybody have any questions on that? Okay, well, then we can go ahead and move on to new business. The first thing that we have is we actually have an opening for a committee member seat. We have had several volunteers, but there was some question about when I get volunteers, I generally send them out to the committee for review, and then the chair would generally make it make that choice. And so I wanted to do kind of an analysis to compare the committee makeup to the representation for the volunteers and for committee members. And so based on that, you all could decide on who would maybe be the best fit. Of course, you probably want to look at, do you know these people personally? Do you know their, if they would, you know, you think that they would come to meetings and have thoughtful comments and work well as part of the group. But also, you know, we don't want to have a condensed group in just one hub, for instance. So I tried to compare that for everyone. But part of that conversation was, should we actually have that formalized? I think in the past, we have not had it formalized that we have so many members as representative of this group or that group, simply because it kind of depends on who volunteers. But that isn't to say that we couldn't do something like that if you wanted to. And so I would be happy to entertain a conversation, and we can talk about what that might look like.
This is Sandy, and I like the fact that we could definitely make sure that we are being representative equally between the sizes of libraries and the area that the hubs are served, just because I feel like we are so geographically spread across and sizes are different. And living in a world where in an academic, we're a community college and we're small, sometimes I feel, speaking with when we're in a big group, like we're part of the Carly group, but our voice is very tiny when you look at everybody else across that academic field that they have in there. So personally, I feel like we should have a nice round genetic makeup that includes the smalls, the mediums, the large publics, the schools, and the specials and the academics, just like we kind of already have somewhat of a semblance of that here going on when you look at the documentation you sent to us.
So would you want to have a formal, like we have so many of this type, so many of that type, or that we just have a statement that we try to be representative of the group as a whole?
The statement is nice. That can definitely, because we also know in a world of that we're in that we can't always find those volunteers. I think you've got a really good round representation. So just having that statement saying that would be perfectly fine in my eyes.
Okay. So what I can do is I will put together just a statement showing that, and that would be available in the minutes. And then I can send it out for a review just to make sure that my wording is correct and that we can have that just as a procedural document stating that our volunteers for this committee, that we will, based on the volunteers who, the people who volunteer to serve, that we'll try to select participants that will be representative of the group as a whole.
Cassandra, I have a question for you. Is the data on who is on this committee, is that available to like all the libraries so that they could see perhaps their hub is not represented as much or their size of library?
We do have that on our share governance page. I don't know that it has the specific data, but it does list the individual and what library they're with.
Okay.
I don't know that it's explicit that it lists, you know, the size of each library or what hub, but generally that would be kind of easy to see if you're familiar with the different libraries in our service area. But I certainly could make that available and we could put that on our governance.
That might be helpful just in case we get the numbers skewed where we have, you know, maybe one person from one hub, and it would be easy to point out that maybe we need to volunteers from that area.
That would be a great idea.
Okay. Yeah. Thank you.
Does everybody also agree with that, of maybe making that data available on the share governance?
I think that would be great. And just to kind of chime in on that, I know I've been on the nomination committee for, I don't know, something many times. And it's helpful to either have it like either in a visual. I mean, I know I don't want to add extra work or anything, but if it was established one time, we might be able to use it for different committees where you just kind of have a blob that show, you know, that shows the, our area. And then you just kind of have the dots where people are located. I think that just really helps bring it home that, oh, wow, they're in my area or whatever.
Sure.
I also want to suggest, and I don't know if I really want my picture on the website because I'm already on others. But anyway, one of the other boards I belong to on our website, they actually have a small headshot with our name of all the members of the board or their offices. Like, you know, Sandy would be chairman. I don't know that I need co-chairman after my name, but it gives a visual. That way, when they are at one of our visual meetings or an in-person meeting, they go, oh, you're the one that's on the, you know, and it helps people verify or acknowledge people they may want to talk to that are on the committees.
Sure. That is a little bit more tricky, Susan, just because I know the with the photos, we would probably want, I don't know if Troy would want to have you guys come in to have pictures taken. But I know that there are certain, like the, not the margins, I'm thinking the wrong terminology, but like
the thing in sizes, percentage, basically the size of the picture or how many pixels. Yeah. And I was just suggesting it that if you're going to do like the map is great with the, where we're located, but you know, sometimes people don't always, how many Susans are there that are librarians in the system or how many Sarahs? And this might be a way for somebody to go, oh, you're that Sarah or you're that Susan. That's what all I was thinking. So
yeah,
it was a suggestion.
That's something that we have talked about internally because we have a system that talks to L2. And I've said that before, it would be so great if we could put photos in there. So I would be able to put faces to names when we're talking to people. But it was kind of the same thing of like, how do we generate those pictures? But I would encourage everybody, if you're for your account in L2, it is very helpful. So when you're at a conference, you know, that you can see people like, oh, I've talked to you a lot before and I recognize you. So
maybe that's just something we need, is just some wordage that refers people. I mean, we have an existing database like this already, where all of the staff, all of the people are there. So just kind of a referral to say, oh, when you join a committee, please update your L2 account in order to provide a photo, because more people may be reaching out to contact you.
Yeah, that's a great idea. Okay. Since I don't have that statement today, we can maybe just table this for the next meeting. I'll have something formal for the next time that we can approve, but otherwise that's just a procedural change, so that would be something that would be internal. It doesn't necessarily need to go out for vote. Does that sound good to everybody?
Yes.
Okay, so based on the conversation today, Sandy, would you feel comfortable making a recommendation for who you'd like to serve as our next new member on this committee?
With the list of volunteers that you sent, I would like to make a recommendation for Joel, and I'll mess up his last name, Pecora from Escuta.
Okay. I'll make sure that he is still interested. I'll reach out to him. And then if so, we'll just leave this agenda item for the next meeting and have him seated at our next meeting.
Okay.
Okay. Wonderful. Thank you. Uh-huh. Okay. So the next item for discussion was the lost item policy and procedures. And so I sent that because when we were reviewing some of our policies, one of the things I noticed that there were some things that were more procedural and then things were more policy based. So I actually tried to separate that out, and then for damaged items the same. And so I did send those for review. Did anybody have any questions on those?
Cassandra, this is Dina. I'm sure I have looked at those, but I've, you know, slept since then. And I forget the wording of them for the damaged ones at least, but the next time we do an upgrade to Polaris, one of the upgrades is you will be able to, as you're checking an item in, and you'll be able to declare it damaged and put the pricing and stuff right there. So that may need to change again. Now, currently we don't have a upgrade scheduled. I'm guessing probably,
spring.
You know, after, it'll be after the first of the year, probably early spring, but that is something that's coming down the pipeline.
So Dina, when that does potentially happen, will it have options on what kind of damage is being checked in per se, or is it just damage?
I think you have options. I'm moving my office to another part of the building and I have all my stuff packed up. So
I'm just curious.
Yeah, I think there is. I haven't looked at it a little bit because we've just have been focusing so much on Aspen. But I do think there is an option. And I think if my memory is correct, you have the option with the amount that you charge too. So if it's like, let me get my circulation brain going here. Like if it's damaged because the barcode was torn out or it needs a new barcode replacement, if you charge $1 for those, I think you have like the option to put a different amount in there too.
Okay.
So, and then looking, I think one of the things is looking back over those, it's also been a while since I've looked at that. There was also some questions about language of just really wanting to make sure that we're clear in our, a little bit more precise on our language. What's the home library? What's the supplying library? What's the requesting library, to make sure that there's no misinterpretation? So did anybody have any suggestions on those?
Home library, why not? Are you talking patron or are you talking item?
Well, home library is specific for patrons.
Okay. Because I almost say if you're dealing with the item, owning library and borrowing library. I think that's the Illinois Air Library loan code words they used.
Yeah, I think it was supplying library, which is there why I changed that. Yeah, okay. Supplying and requesting.
Yeah.
And it was just based because we recently updated some of our definitions, and that's why I think I had made those recommended changes.
So the changes that you've put in reflect the updated definitions, correct?
Yes. Uh-huh.
And they provide consistency. I say go with the consistency so that we're using the same terms across the board.
Okay. Did anybody else have any questions or comments about the actual like procedures or policies that that maybe I missed that we needed to review?
Can I ask a question?
Sure.
So with damages, is there a standard that says this is definitely damage, I'm gonna note it, I'm gonna make somebody responsible for it? Or because like with us, and thankfully our kindergarten through fifth grade doesn't borrow books outside the system, you know, but they have stuff in the backpacks. They constantly spill water or food on the books. Water sometimes dries without a stain. Sometimes it doesn't, depending on what it was. So, you know, and we do order books in for our junior high kids and sometimes teachers. And sometimes we get stuff in that's like, oh, why is this still in circulation? This book's horrible, you know? So is there a standard, or it's just up to each library what they consider a book to be damaged?
Yeah, unfortunately, the only line that we have about damage is whether it can or cannot be circulated. But there are definitely differences of opinion
on that. Yeah, for sure.
Constitutes absolutely.
Oh yeah, that's kind of what we are. If it can still circulate, there's not mold growing on it. You know, somebody hasn't obscured the text by scribbling all over it. We try to make. And I hate having pop-ups in the books, you know, because we use parent volunteers. And a lot of times they ignore the pop-ups. If you put a check-in note, And they're checking in a bunch of books. They get a check-in note. They ignore that. They've checked in 20 more books, and all of a sudden those 20 books aren't checked in, and they shelve them. So I like to just like put little, like my initials, noted, damage noted, inside, you know, so at least see it.
Mm-hmm. The reason I put the pop-up note in there is so that the library doesn't think it happened before it got to them if I'm sending it out.
Right.
Also, it keeps them from blaming the patron. And it's something that reminds us when it comes back like that, we know it was already existent. Because I always put like water damaged, and then I put the date that we noted it in the record. And I know people hate pop-up notes, but I have pop-up notes for multi-CD sets and multi-DVD sets.
Right.
And but I'm like you, Jennifer. If the book is still readable and it's not moldy, it's not mildewed, I send it off. But I've had people who... libraries in our system who sent a book back to me because somebody had underlined something in the book and that was damaged and they didn't want the book. And then I've had people chew me out because I'm circulating 1982 paperbacks because they're out of print and they're very popular. And yeah, they're really worn, but they're still readable. So yeah, I circulate it. I put an extremely worn message in there. If I'm willing to send it, you shouldn't be chewing me out for sending it, you know?
Right.
Your patron wants it. Let him read it.
Agreed, because that's really what it is. You can, like, if it's marked damages to come in, that we always let our patrons, and mostly their students, this is what was marked. We are not holding you responsible, but you have the choice to say yes or no, whether or not you want to borrow the item.
Okay. Yeah, we do the same thing, Sandy.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's a... If stuff comes in for our junior high kids and it's pages are starting to come out, I won't give it to them. I won't even let the student make that decision because they're going to take it. They're going to lose half the pages out of the book. And I just turn around and send it back.
Yeah. And I appreciate when people send it back saying, hey, loose pages, because when we sent it, it may have been close to being loose, but maybe the process of delivery and taking rubber bands, I don't know. It's just, it's one of those things. I try to keep the book circulating and not charge my patrons more than I have to. But then again, if somebody brings me a book and it's obviously mildewed and it's like grown to three times its width because it's water damaged and waterlogged, or if the hard cardboard covers are so waterlogged, they bend and they are flexible, then yes, you're going to get charged for it. You know?
Yeah. And it's really hard to know what to even charge my own student patrons for damage. You know, if they've got water on it, do I let it dry? Do I note it? It's just,
I always contact the library. Like I just sent back a slightly water damaged book for a woman the other day. And I called the library once I'd taken the book and I told the woman I would let her know once the library decided. And, you know, so I called the library and told them, they said, send it back and let them look at it. Because there are some libraries that would charge me for the edges of the pages being damp and being a little bit water wrinkled. And then there are libraries like me that would be like, oh, it's still readable. It's dried. It didn't mildew. It didn't mold. Okay. No damp, no charge.
Right.
So I just try to talk to the other libraries when it happens as much as possible.
Yeah. And I have to say that a group of this size, and as long as I've been here, I've only had phone calls regarding this issue a handful of times of where, well, they said it was damaged. I don't think it was. And then like, I get pictures back and it was like, oh, this is major damage. And the actual resolution was that it probably the determination was it was damaged in transit. And so maybe it got water on it while it was being delivered. And so we ended up taking the hit on that one because it's just not worth the bad blood between our member libraries sometimes. But of like those handful of times that we've ever had issues with it, I think most people accept that it's each individual library, the library that owns the item, it's up to them essentially. So I think our policy itself is very good. It was just making sure that the language is precise and correct. So I wanted to make a suggestion to get those updated.
Do we need a motion or anything to get this done?
Yeah, if we can either do them separately or we can do them all together as a group, whatever you all prefer.
Could you restate the what you're recommending so I can do a motion? I'm sorry.
Oh, yeah.
It is not following well today.
So to go ahead and approve the minor changes to the damaged item procedures and then the lost item, procedure, and policy.
I move that we allow the minor changes to the damaged item procedures. You're saying do separate, right? So that's my first motion.
Okay.
All right, Tammy Caputo, I'll second that.
Okay, and we'll go ahead and do a roll call vote. Right. Oh, I'm so sorry. Give me just one moment. Get back to the right screen. Okay, Sandy West?
Yes.
Tammy Caputo?
Yes.
Janet Claire?
Yes.
Mary Cordes?
Yes.
Esther Kerr, or Esther's not here, sorry. Sarah Isaacs?
Yes.
Susan McKinney?
Yes.
Did I see Jennifer?
Yes.
Oh, there you are. Okay, I want to make sure. Paula Treader?
Yes.
And Diane Yeoman?
Yes.
Okay, all approved.
I move that we allow the minor changes to the lost billing procedures.
And do you want to do the procedures and policy or just go each?
Oh, no, I'm sorry. I didn't realize policy. I will add and policy. So again, I move that we allow the minor changes to the lost items, procedures, and policies.
Okay.
All right, Tammy Caputo, I'll second that.
Okay, we'll go ahead and do a roll call. Sandy West?
Yes.
Amy Caputo?
Yes.
Janet Claire?
Yes.
Mary Cordes?
Yes.
Esther, I did it again. Sarah Isaacs?
Yes.
Susan McKinney?
Yes.
Jennifer Slack?
Yes.
Paula Treader?
Yes.
Diane Yeoman?
Yes.
Okay, so moved. Excellent. So next up on our agenda, is the Aspen configuration. And really, we're just kind of fine tuning some things and wanted to bring a few things to your attention so we could make some changes. One of the big ones that we've already changed was the stylization for ebooks. We actually have an internal style guide at IHLS where we've kind of worked on some of this wording. Like ebooks, for instance, when it's small e, big B, that's an iPad thing that we actually changed. So it's e-books, for example. But a lot of it is in the wording. And so we did have a member library that reached out because the holds, for instance, the language Aspen was using was freeze and thaw. And in our old system, we have used suspend and reactivate. So we changed that language, but a lot of this is very customizable. And so wanted to just touch base with you all about some of this configuration. One of the questions was audiobooks that are in a digital format, because there's a couple ways that we could phrase that of e-audiobooks. We had suggested digital audiobooks as an option. So we don't have, when we talk about audiobooks with our style guide in print materials, we always refer to them just as audiobooks. We don't differentiate because we are seeing that shift to where these are more digital materials and not physical materials, but that doesn't work in our catalog simply because they're going to be in comparison with audiobook cassette, there's still a few out there, you know, CDs, playaways, you know, so we wanted to bring that to the committee if you guys had a preference of how we refer to those items.
The only thing I would say is like Overdrive, they're called e-audiobooks with just no dash between the E and the audiobook. And I think, you know, if people are doing downloads, I don't know how Cloud Library, I haven't looked at Cloud Library to know a lot to know whether it says e-audiobook. But I would think we'd want to keep the language similar to what those downloadable content is so people don't get confused by the different terms.
And I am
going to my suggestion.
Yeah, so cloud, and that's what actually started it for us because Cloud Library no longer refers to them as e audiobooks. Oh. They just call them audiobooks. Someone, let's see, let me go back to the chat.
I've always liked the digital audiobooks because like for us, we promote, because we have CD audiobooks, is it's definitely indicates that they can use their phone. I mean, if they're not present in front of me, as I, you know, you can say it's a digital audiobook. So that means to me that hopefully triggers them to think they could download it to their phone. Or maybe we should say downloadable audiobook.
Yeah.
Is Cassandra, and is this going to be part of the standing definitions that you guys are going to make sure that everybody's aware of? Okay.
Yes. Yeah, this is part of our configuration that we're just trying to coordinate.
Cassie, if I may, I do the updates for Cloud Library in the pack and bulk changes for our audiobooks, the digital ones, and we do change it to digital download, I believe, or downloadable audiobook. So that's the current language in the pack for the Cloud Library.
I could go with downloadable. I mean, if we're going to, I want to be consistent between all the different downloadable consortiums. I don't want it being too confusing for people out there.
And so one of the things that's good about the Aspen is it does differentiate that it's OverDrive versus you know, Cloud Library versus Hoopla. Let me go select a catalog. Can I use St. Joe as an example? Maybe we'll search there. Would that be okay?
Sure, because I do have both Cloud and DLIL. So
that's what I was thinking. So let me go to
that. Don't have Hoopla though.
Okay. So just so you can see what it would look like, and then that way that we can really make a choice, and just, you know, if we have other suggestions, we can always make it, we can always change. We don't have to stick with any one thing, but I was thinking as we are getting closer, we might want to just decide on something before we go live. So let me share my screen. Okay, so I just did a quick search for Lord of the Rings. And so you can see audiobook CD. But you see here, when we actually show it, we're showing the actual location of where it's at. So here we're using digital audiobook, but we could change that to downloadable audiobook. And then there would be other places where it might come up, like over here, there's digital collection. Nope, it's not in there specifically, but there are some areas where it would change. So the three options, kind of what I'm hearing, is e-audiobook, which would match e-books, digital audiobook, or downloadable audiobook. Can we do like a show of hands of what, just we'll do a democracy and see what everybody prefers? Show of hands if you prefer e-audiobook. Okay, we've got two. Show of hands, digital audiobook. Four, five.
It doesn't really matter to me as long as we have a way of differentiating. I'm easy, okay? Sorry.
And downloadable audiobook. Okay.
I voted twice. I changed my answer.
Okay. So what was your first one, Sarah?
Digital.
Digital?
I think downloadable is clearer. It's like, it's obvious what it is.
Because technically, I think, Jennifer, according to cataloging, even audiobooks on CD are considered digital because
right. Like,
you put them on the CD. So
if they're on an MP3 player and you're checking out the MP3 player, it's still a digital audiobook. So that's where it gets confusing.
So I think e or downloadable are your two choices. Digital could be confusing to people.
Okay, so let's do a new show of hands. Who prefers e audiobooks? Okay, who prefers downloadable audiobooks? Okay, then we will make that change. This next one is we made an executive decision about, but I'm happy to bring it to the committee because we can, again, things are so customizable, it can be changed. Right now, we are not allowing reviews, patron reviews, to go public because we are not moderating reviews. They have a list of bad words that is 66 pages long.
Oh my gosh.
Do try. We were having a lot of fun looking through these lists, let me tell you. But so they do try to have a solution in place, but we all know you can get around those so easily. So we did turn off public reviews. The ratings are still available, and but there was a second piece of social media reviews, and so like Goodreads reviews, we've also turned that off. But we, again, can turn any of that back on if the committee feels that they would be valuable enough to do so. But again, those are not moderated in any shape or form. So is everybody okay with that decision of just leaving public reviews off?
Patients?
Yes. Okay. Okay. So that was my second question. And then for the configuration, we're kind of talking about wording. I want to go ahead and just show you, there's some things that I think are odd and want to bring up to the committee. One of the things that I've already changed was there was a facet, which is the filtering on the left side of the screen that said added in the last, which means like when it was added to the catalog, but it was clunky. So I changed it to just last added, for example. But let me get a picture so we can go over the different categories and just check the wording, see if anybody has a better way of saying it, or if it's me being persnickety and not a problem. So I'm gonna do another screen share. I'm not in the real-time catalog. I wanted to do a screenshot to make sure it was showing up of what I was seeing yesterday when I looked at it. Okay. So can everybody see this here in the dark, a novel, the screenshot from that?
Yes.
So one of the things that was driving me crazy was ebooks, when you can't see it here, but ebook up top is not plural, but it is here down at the bottom. And so that's something that they, if you see these little green boxes, that's affiliated with their language databases. And so book here is 2871, and then books plural up here is 2551. With their ebook icon, it doesn't match. So it's got to be singular because it's going to be singular down here in the results. It's a minor issue, but I've already sent it over to fix because I just want it to be consistent so that this everything up here at the top will be plural. Music, of course, there's no plural to music. It's still music, but the rest of them, it just matches. Again, persnickety being a minor change. The tabs up top, if we could start with that, if we could, do we want to change the tab share libraries to just share, or do you prefer it remain share libraries?
I think we've gotten people used to calling it share. I don't know that we need share libraries. It just takes up space. It's redundant, but that's me.
That was my sense too, but I wanted to bring it to if anybody else disagrees.
No, I agree as well.
So is that saying in share system, there's a total of 4,382 at Edwardsville, there's 3,751 that breaks it down as you go across. I guess, I don't know. What's it saying?
Yeah. So that's the number of results just based on whatever search that I had done.
Okay.
I think I just picked something for that. But the actual wording at the tabs at the top is going to be consistent no matter what search you're using. So when I am logged in, if I'm using the Edwardsville Public Library's URL to search their catalog, it's actually going to show up Edwardsville Public Library results first. And so I have the tab makes perfect sense, but the share libraries tab, I can go ahead and just change that to share and then kind of toggle back. I was kind of having the same issue with available now in library, available now online. Those tabs are specific, that those are items that are available, not just that you have a copy. So that when they say available now, they really mean available right now on the shelf. I don't love it, but that's my opinion. So I wanted to also bring that to the committee. And that's the same for an available now online. That means there's no holds. You can check it out, whatever the search result may be. So maybe that first book, if that's what I'm looking for, it might not be available. You know, if you've got 3,600 results, it's probably not that book. But they do have results showing of what's on the shelf. So I wanted to see if we wanted to say available in library, available online, or leave it as is.
I think for me, the now makes sense, because if it just says available in the library, that doesn't, as a user, to me, that means that library has it. Mm-hmm. I don't necessarily think to me that it means it's ready to be checked out or on the shelf.
They use the terminology available now in Cloud Library, like for the availability toggle on and off. So I don't know if that's consistency enough to leave it at available now.
Okay. Okay. Well, I am, like I said, this is one person, as I was looking at it, I wanted to bring it to everybody. So the next one is the checked out available elsewhere. I think that's wordy. I think it's a little odd. But it's very...
I hate to say it, Cassandra, but it spells it out for the patron. Because if it just says checked out, they're going to assume it's available here. Because that's what it does for where I own things. I think saying it's available right now elsewhere means that they can put on hold and get it. A lot of people don't always, no matter how many times you explain that we can get stuff free from another library, there are patrons who just don't understand that, it doesn't have to be in these four walls. So I know it's wordy, but it does spell it out for the patrons. I mean, maybe a couple of years down the road, we can get rid of it because they will have figured it out by then. But.
Well, I was wondering, because I also like the available elsewhere. I just didn't know if we needed to identify that it's also checked, like your copy is checked out, if we needed both.
I think so, because if it just says available elsewhere, they may go, so it's on your shelf and then it's not there because it's checked out. I think we have to have both terms for now. Okay. That's, again, my opinion.
I would agree with Susan. You hate to say that you're dumbing it down, but for some patrons, you have to.
Sure.
I mean, is it available elsewhere or available to request? I mean, does one make more sense to the other? Because I think a lot of my people aren't going to just be like, I'll go elsewhere. It'll be, I will request it. Does that make sense?
Mm-hmm.
I was thinking available to request would be wordy, but I don't know.
Oh, I agree it's wordy, but the whole thing is kind of wordy too.
Yeah.
But I don't know, spacing wise, that might be too many words. So
available to request spells it out even more than available elsewhere. But the thing is, if we don't own it, it just says available elsewhere. So are we changing like if I didn't own it, it's going to say available to request instead of available elsewhere? Because I think we need to be consistent with that.
Where else does it say available elsewhere?
If you don't own the item, it comes up like when she brought up the list of the Lord of the Rings stuff of from my library, the items I didn't own, it said available elsewhere.
Okay, then yeah, maybe it's better to keep it consistent then.
And the fact that it says
checked out so that they know that she has a copy, it's just not available right now.
And also what it right there to the right, it says a place a hold, which says, you know, we can't give it to you right now. So I like the wording as it is.
Yeah,
I tend to agree. Yeah.
So it's actually interesting because I just looked at the Lord of the Rings. I went back to that. It's available from another library.
I like that.
Wait a minute. It's not consistent. Okay. It needs to be fixed. Consistency. One or the other, not both.
So we want to leave that one as checked out, available elsewhere, and then change the other one instead of available from another library, available elsewhere.
Yes. It's very clear what it's when it says it that way.
I missed the word change there, Cassandra. Thanks for pointing that out.
No problem. I just wanted to check it to see, to make sure I was like wrapping my head around it. Okay. Let's see. I think that was for all of the wording. I think that was all I had for you today for that part. There are still some things that we have some more where we can make language consistent, even though you're calling it, we're going to have an example of this here in just a little bit, but like young adult fiction, for example, or something like that. And then we could come up with a standard of what to call it, even though your item is still going to call it what's on your shelf locate or your collection. So we're looking at that, but that's going to be something that we'll be doing through, you know, it'll be kind of a long process. And then the next thing I have for you for configuration is not really about wording. It's about what we're showing. And so this is something that we actually already talked to the BIB standards committee about. And that was about what CERC statuses should be suppressed. So right now in our existing pack, we don't suppress anything. If it's been damaged, it's showing. If it's been lost, it's showing. If it's in processing, it shows. If it's
withdrawn,
withdrawn, it's all showing. Aspen has recommended that we do more suppression of some of these items, and there's some technical reasons for why they want that. When we took it to the BIB standards, there were only two statuses that they thought should be suppressed. Jennifer, I am off the top of my head, I'm so sorry, I'm not remembering exactly.
The one that comes to mind most quickly is withdrawn.
Withdrawn
was their main one that they would like to suppress.
Okay.
That's what Rachel was saying in the chat too.
I'm pulling up.
I would hope we keep on order showing because those are the books that we've ordered and people like to place their holds before they come in.
Yeah, absolutely. The ones that I was wondering were in repair, if we should have that suppressed, but I think BIB standards wanted that to still show.
Yeah. The only one that they would like to send forward is withdrawn.
Are you all okay with that?
Yeah.
What was their reasoning in keeping it not suppressed?
What are you talking about? Which one?
Like the in repair or missing? Why did they?
I will explain. My copy of Tale of Two Cities is in repair because somebody damaged it. It shows we still own it. It's just not available right now. For my patrons to know that, yes, I do own a copy of Tale of Two Cities. Because I've had patrons who would come in and go, what do you mean you don't own a copy of X? So if you suppress it, then it looks like I don't own it. And it does show they can put a hold on it for when it's done, when it's done being repaired, they'll get it.
Yeah, I think part of the discussion was what statuses patrons would be able to understand. So like if they saw in repair, they would know like, okay, this book is broken, mm-hmm. but it will eventually be available to me. But withdrawn, they thought that maybe patrons wouldn't necessarily know what that meant. And then a lot of times also some libraries are using it to weed their collection. Mm-hmm. And so that needs to be removed anyway.
Yeah, I agree with that. I think, you know, even sometimes staff gets confused by what does withdrawn mean. So, you know, a patron, I can absolutely see that being the case.
Okay. Well, then if everybody is okay with that, we'll make those changes for the configuration.
So withdrawn is the only one we're suppressing.
Yes. Okay. All right. Okay. So, do we? We do have one more piece of other new business that I'm sorry, it just we didn't get it on the agenda. Was also from the BIB Standards Committee of that request that came to them for a new type of young adult. Jace, help me out. I know we talked about this literally.
You're fine. The change did not save whenever I put it on the agenda, you know, in October. So I apologize for that. There was a request to put in young adult books as a new material type. And there was some discussion amongst the committee that it would make it to where there was a lot of changes, especially on the back end. Because if you go into like fiction there, you know, or I think it was in juvenile fiction, they had like different like branches of a bunch of them. And so we would have to add all of that for young adult books also. And so the concern would be that it was, you know, adding, I don't even know how many, it was like, what, like 10 or 15 of them that we would have to add, mm-hmm. right, Jen?
Yeah. At least, yes.
But there was concern that, you know, it's different, you know, some people look at it differently. So would it be useful to have, mm-hmm. even though it's a lot of work kind of thing?
Is that one of those where you have to add it to each agency too? So it's not just 10 to 15, it's like multiplied times the number of
yes.
numbers.
A lot of back-end work. Mm-hmm. Especially in situations where you could potentially use collection codes to gather a lot of the same data.
I was going to say, wouldn't it, if it's that they want to do different check-in dates or different renewal options, wouldn't a collection code be better than a material type?
In that case, those are set by material type rather than collection code.
Yeah.
Collection code is more for statistical purposes okay. and inventory purposes than the other side of it.
Is there a standard somewhere of material types that we could follow? Because I don't view a young adult book as a material type. To me, book is the type of material it is, or it's an audiobook CDs.
There is on our website, if you go to circulation and then codes, we do have those material type codes listed.
Okay.
And that is the argument I think that we have made throughout the years that we actually want to start weeding this down a little bit, and not because we want to tell, you know, because the material type is not the same thing as your collection type, like your collection code. This is more of a cataloging function. And
when I also thought material types, like my material type book, will charge a different fine than say Bahamas, or you know, your material type is specified to your agency, but it is still a material type. I kind of see this as just adding more mess to our system out there. I like clean code.
I think one of the other reasons that somebody in the committee did want to see it added was that they thought it would make it easier for IPLR reporting.
Mm-hmm.
Because I think there's maybe some line items on the IPLR where they specify like it's something with circulation where they would be able to track that easier.
Except you can use collection codes to do that too. You can
right.
see your circulation by collection codes. I do it every month for my stats to keep
right.
it.
The argument in that case was that you can't always easily identify what the collection code means. Some of them are very vague, and we are working on paring those down and eliminating duplicates, ones that aren't used. So down the road, that may take care of that situation.
And there was also a concern that like school libraries in particular would be using just fiction instead of like young adult fiction, because they're not differentiating it because they don't have that older audience. So then that would be muddling the results anyway.
And, okay. So yeah. As somebody who does my IPLAR stats every month, so I don't have to do it at the end of the year for IPLAR, when I see it's a school, I put it as juvenile. It's just, to me, if it's coming from a school, it's more than likely a juvenile. Okay, some high schools might have, but you could justify some of those as young adult. So that's still going to be under my juvenile category, because they don't do a young adult category in IPLAR, it's juvenile or adult. So again, it's kind of just being able to interpret or extrapolate.
And not that I'm in the IPLAR world, but is there a definition in the IPLAR survey rules that say book is classified adult based on parameters, and a juvenile classification in IPLAR means this?
No, it just says how many juvenile circulation by types, you know, do book, audiobook, DVD, and then it says adult.
So basically the library gets to decide what they okay.
It's just like I do everything as juvenile, but there are libraries that do things as young adult.
Yeah, we do here. We do young adult because typically we have our children's library focused for those kids under the age of 8. So you wouldn't necessarily out here, because we have students that could be reading at a lower level. We wanted to make sure that they understood this collection is deemed young adults, which would, you know, necessarily be a lower level reading than an adult book would be, without putting a stipulation on this is what this reading level is. But I know in schools I do reading levels per se. Is it easy enough in definitions that the system has going on for share just to say fiction? In general terms, fiction means adult, so that it doesn't get confused to those who are saying they're using the word fiction when they're describing their material.
Well, are you talking collection codes or material types?
Just a material type.
As material fiction. Type doesn't do fiction, it does books.
And I'm with that, because to me, paperback, hardback, it's still a book.
Yeah, and I think that we have been having kind of a push to reduce those material types. And so instead of, increasing them.
Dina has put in the chat a list of the 91 material types we currently have definitions for in the system, if you want to take a look at it.
And that is a lot.
And we had talked about this before. I think that we were kind of going through Josh, one of our catalogers, was going through working on this, because some of them are so obscure that, and we had also been asked about adding like a 4D HD, that we want to focus not on the, we want to focus on the actual device, not the technology. And so I think that there were a lot of like 3D juvenile 3D Blu-ray combos or something like that. It's just a lot. So
I know when we first started with reserves, we were having to come up with a way to, because at the time we were still charging fines, and distinguish material type to reflect a different fine fee at the time. But I'm more of a, we don't need to make a recommendation to add another type of material into the systems.
Okay. Is that the consensus for the committee, or does anybody disagree? Okay, I'm not hearing any disagreement. So we can take that back to the BIB Standards Committee and let them know what we all discussed. Okay.
I did have one comment. Doesn't material type, like for our junior high students, that we let request books outside of our library. And so I have to change their patron code to filter YA. Doesn't that affect what they can actually request? Because we don't want them requesting adult books. And I really haven't had too much of a problem with it. But
Jennifer, my public library, my juvenile, my easy, my adult books are books. The material type is books. The collection code is where I differentiate between adult and juvenile.
So does the collection, is that what affects what they request?
No. And so Jennifer and Dina, please feel free. If I misinterpret this, please correct me. But those are only for cloud library items, and it's for cloud library filtering. So
okay.
What they can access on the cloud library database.
Cloud library, okay.
Yep, nothing with your kiddos could request, you know, 50 Shades of Grey if they wanted to. The system is not going to prevent that. That's more like you see it come in and say, wait a minute.
Yeah. I thought there was a way, like if your collection code, you can like put, like if a card is young adult, I thought there was a way that you could put with the collection. Because I know I have patrons who complain about this from Urbana because they're on their own Polaris system, that they couldn't check out something because it was a higher rating than what because my cards are juvenile or adult. I didn't have young adult cards. So the kids couldn't check out the PG-13s at Urbana. So I thought there was some way that by collection code, you can limit who can check out by collection codes.
Well, what we do, tell them up front they can only request books. So if a CD or a game happens to come in, we turn around and send it back and we tell the kid, we said books only. So we kind of make that judgment call when it comes in. And I really haven't seen really any adult material. Although a lot of them like Heartbreaker. We get that in a lot. You know, and this is sixth grade and I'm like, oh my God.
Yeah,
but their parents signed off that they could request it.
Yeah, Dina, I'm going to turn this one over to you because I don't know of a way to do that, but maybe you do.
Currently, there is not, and I was just looking for it real quick. I apologize. I'm like multitasking today, and I don't know if it's. I don't think it's.
Or maybe it's Heartstopper.
I don't think it's Polaris 7.4 or 7.5, but. Coming down the pipeline through Polaris.
I was going to say, Dean, it could have been the previous software that we were all on.
You will be coming down the pipeline. And I was looking in 7.4 and 7.5, my documentation. I can't remember if it's in that or if it's just something that's coming up. You will have the option to, I'm trying to think of a way to say, to word this so I'm not even confusing myself. You can put limits on the material type by the patron code. I think that makes sense. So like if someone is a juvenile resident patron code, they wouldn't be able to check out certain types of material types. You can put limitations on that.
And
I hope I'm making sense.
That makes
sense. Because I don't know if I'm making sense.
That would be default. So like, I don't put limitations on my stuff.
Yeah.
So unless I put limitations on my stuff, it's not going to happen to my patrons, right?
And of course, when you're trying to find something,
I know.
You can't find it.
Well, and because we're not a singular entity that has consistent collection codes, that really... I think we can maybe cross that bridge when we get there, but that's not going to make sense for our group because
we're
able to get around it 100 different ways because of those 100 different collection codes.
When we upgrade next, it is in 7.5. It's using age-related loan policies. You can now configure Polaris to restrict checkouts and hold requests for specific material types based on the patron's age. For example, you can block patrons under the age of 13 from checking out or placing hold requests on movies rated PG-13.
But is that material type or collection codes? Because that's kind of weird that they would do such a broad material type, DVD.
Yeah, material types. And I have, since I, so again, we've been focusing so much recently on Aspen, I haven't deep dived into what's in the upgrade yet because we're not there yet.
Also, is it one of those updates that it's either all of us do it or none of us do it, that we can't do by agency, which we've had those kind of updates come through where people were excited, but
yeah,
it couldn't be by agency?
Yeah.
And if it's not coming up yet, we can talk, we can burn that bridge when we get to it.
Yeah, yeah, because we're not there yet. And like I said, it's probably going to be, you know, early spring before we do this. So I'll have a chance to deep dive, and I love deep diving. So
yeah, we can definitely research that and maybe even test it to see. I always am, I'm hesitant with a technology solution that could go so terribly wrong for like kids who might truly need, I mean, somebody puts in a DVD that it's really, you know, Ice Age, and then they're being blocked from getting it because it's the material type and it's perfectly appropriate. Whereas, you know, you're filtering out 98% of the things when you're trying to catch the 2%. We can definitely bring this back to the committee when it gets closer to time. Okay. Any other comments or questions on that? All right. Do we have any old business? Okay. Public comment. And thank you, everybody, for sitting in our meeting today. We're so glad that you are joining us. Do we have any announcements? I think we have maybe one announcement, if I can put one of our committee members on the spot. Janet Claire?
Yeah. Yes. Okay, Cassandra. So as many of you know, I'm going to be retiring at the, actually April the 19th will be my last day here. So I'll be leaving the committee. And I was going to mention that earlier when Sandy was picking someone, you're certainly welcome to go ahead and try to move forward with that if that's in the best interest of the committee. So
congratulations on your retirement.
Thank you. Thank you.
Congratulations. It's been fun working with you.
Well, thank you.
Yeah, four months, though.
I do have a little bit longer, so we're just trying to get some things wrapped up. So
I know we had talked before about maybe going through the February meeting, but are you ready to say that you're ready to step back, or do you want to just plan?
No, I'll do whatever you is best for the committee. So I don't mind staying through the end of February, but if you have a different direction you want to go, that's certainly fine with me. You know, if you have another candidate that you want to get brought in and get going on things, that's fine with me. But no, I would be happy to stay till the end of February.
Okay, great. All right. And we do have, so our next meeting is in was scheduled in February, but that's actually falling on the same day as Member Day. So I wanted to see if we wanted to reschedule that meeting. As we have everybody, we can maybe get something on a calendar, maybe just move it to a different week, if Thursday still works for everybody. So the Member Day is on February 8th. If maybe we could move it back to, so the following Thursday is a third Thursday, which is our CE event. I don't actually know if we're doing a third Thursday because of Member Day. I'm sorry, I don't have that information. But the 22nd is totally free.
Let me check with Ellen on the third Thursday. She's just right next door. Give me a second.
Okay. To be honest, the fourth Thursday would be better for me than the third Thursday. I have staff meeting and board meeting on the third Thursdays.
Would everybody else be available on the 22nd? I don't want to necessarily cancel just because of Aspen. We might have some things that we need to go over.
I will be gone on the 22nd, if that's a factor at all.
I will be here.
I just checked with Ellen. There will be no third Thursday with Member Day.
Third Thursday's fine. I can squeeze it in. I'll just be nuts that day.
Anybody else have a conflict on either? Okay. Well, why don't we go ahead and plan on the 15th at our regular time at 10 a.m. Okay. All right. So I think that that's it. Then I will, again, the next share meeting will be the annual meeting on the 24th, January 24th. And then our next meeting will be on February 15th at 10 a.m. So I will go ahead and turn it back over to you, Sandy.
Looking at the clock, I have 11:16 on the clock, and I will adjourn this meeting. Thank you, everyone. Merry Christmas. Happy New Year.
I hope everybody has a wonderful holiday, get to spend time with family and loved ones, and enjoy any time off if you have it. So.